Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the season premiere of Insight into Healing. So excited to be back. They had such an incredible summer, but it's always amazing to come back to our first episode of Insight into Healing of the season. Again, Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Please remember, send all questions, guest info, and show updates to insightintohealing@gmail.com. And remember, all names remain anonymous. And also remember my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, that you can find at www.ccbpublishing.com/acervodidio.html. Requesting an autographed copy? Again, send me an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com, and be sure to join myself and other authors at Barnes & Noble, September 24th in Scarsdale, New York, from 12 to 4. Well, tonight I'm going to start the season with questions that I received over the summer from many listeners. I've done a few book signings over the summer, and a lot of times people have come up with questions about anxiety, depression, trying to find a job, dealing with chaos and dealing with trauma and stress in their lives. So I figured I'd like to start off with our first question. Dear Alexa, let me begin by thanking you for being an inspiration to me and many others. Thank you. I remember the days of going to your aerobics classes and piquing my interest in social work, as at that time I was a teacher and not liking it much. Fast forward about 7 to 8 years later, I decided to change my career to social work. I am now a proud LMSW that came with a lot of hard work as I struggled with a learning disability. Well, number one, I would love to commend you on that right now. One, even taking the LMSW exam is a huge accomplishment, and then passing it is huge. And I just, with a learning disability and being able to take that on, you really need to be very, very proud of yourself, because that is a huge, huge accomplishment. Now I'm at the point where I'm looking for a job in the social work field. I have been very busy this summer applying for jobs, sending out resumes, and going on job interviews. I did not either hear back from the employers or get the typical "we went with another candidate" answer, leaving me feel a bit disappointed. Or I send my resumes out and never hear back from the places I applied to. My question is, I feel like a hamster running on the wheels, and I'm wondering, is it me? Do I need to do something better? Should I slow it down and take it easier? Or am I being too hard on myself? Keep in mind, I prepare for my interviews by researching about the agency and doing mock interviews. Any feedback would be greatly appreciated. Well, I think that's incredible right there, and I think you're really teaching our listeners with your question, but also helping us realize how important it is how to prepare for an interview. And I really think it's amazing how you research the agency and then doing mock interviews, because I find that is so, so important to be able to show interest, but also to know what you're talking about. And I also want to let you know, I know you feel like, is this you, why they're not answering back. It's a numbers game, and it's a timing game. And I think over the summer, too, sometimes it could be a little bit tough. But I think, like in any field, it takes a while. I think you need to be sending out your resumes as you're doing. Keep plugging away. Please don't give up on doing this. It is not you. The more interviews you go on, the more you're knowing about your field, the more information you're getting on these different agencies. And just think, write down all this research. Keep that for the next agency or company that you go to, because these are all resources that you've researched. I mean, how incredible would it be to go to a certain agency where you already know about housing, where you know about case management, or how to work with students with special needs? Because so many agencies need that networking and also need to be able to have people say, hey, we have this case, something's going on, who do we contact? And by you meeting with all these people, that's a contact. You can always say, even when you're working at another agency, hey, I interviewed back with you a few months ago, now I'm working here. I know your agency specializes in this, and I had such a great interview with you. What would you recommend I do? And I think just see this as a learning experience. I know that's a lot easier done, you know, thought about doing than actually feeling it, because it's very, very hard. But I think really keep gathering all your information. Keep up your hope and your motivation, because you are on exactly the same path that you need to be. When I started out in the social work field years ago, I began facilitating social groups for the chronically mentally ill, mentally challenged, where I would take out about 20 to 25 adults, and I would take them to different social activities. Just, you know, some things would be as simple as going to the restaurant, going to the mall, going to the movies, to going to different parks, to going to plays. I think that was so incredible, and which taught me as a beginning step on how to teach clients, how to work with people, and how important it is. Do you know how hard it is for someone with anxiety, with depression, who's never been out or who has a chronic mental illness, to feel comfortable in a restaurant, to feel comfortable, you know, doing out daily activities around people and around huge crowds? So it was just so incredible for me and my repertoire to bring to me myself now as in my private practice. Because I really have the understanding and the skills that I know what happens to a client who says, well, maybe you don't really know much about this, but I really haven't left the house in 20 years. I have severe anxiety. Coming to your office was hard enough. It's hard taking the bus. It's hard being around people. Where I can say, yes, I can understand that. And I know what skills I can help that person build and how to approach that person. And I think each place you start off with, each place that you work at, that you intern at, that you volunteer at, really is something to put on your resume. It's all information. There is not a day that does not go by that I do not use my past internships, past agencies, companies I've worked with or interviewed with as I do now. I also, you know, also after working at the place facilitating groups, I began in another agency years later doing crisis intervention and case management / housing. So through all of this, I also got to go to so many housing meetings for social services. I was able to see what they were looking for. I know how to fill out a housing application. I know to do all this stuff. So when a client comes into my private practice, usually a lot of therapists really don't know how to do a housing application or really want to, because it's, you know, a long, long process to do. But I can facilitate and help a client say, hey, listen, you can get a caseworker. Worst comes to worst, I can help you. You have to do it online. This is the process that it was years ago. Contact this person at this agency. This is usually the process. And I think it's so empowering for myself, also empowering for the client to know that I have this background. So please keep doing what you're doing and going on these job interviews, taking down notes, and also ask these interviewers what they're looking for and what they're looking for in the population that they're working with, that the clientele that they're working with, and different things that they would want to learn about. Because I think it's so important to find out each agency's their mantra, their mission statement, because that can really help you kind of see what their sights are and what their view and perception of social work and the field is. So no, don't be hard on yourself. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep sending out those resumes. And also having a teaching career and having that in your background, that's huge. Use that too. I know you want to be in the social work and you kind of don't want to have the teacher thing, but you need to know your niche. Bring both to the table and somehow it'll work with you. You know, you have to also understand, I started off as doing acting and commercial print modeling. And, you know, my father always said, you have to go to social work school. Go to college, do this, you know, have a different niche. And I always had a very deep interest in social work and law and all of that. And now I have this as my niche. Who knew many years later I would have my own radio show, that it would be in the entertainment industry, having my radio show, talking about mental health issues, talking about that, but then also interviewing film people and arts people on my show. So I was able to bring all of that to my Insight into Healing radio show, but then also to the Alexa show. So I think don't look at it as a discouragement. Just look at it as a way as building your brand, building who you are and what your niche is and what you have to bring to the table. I hope I answered your question, and please keep us updated and let us know also if you also want to send me more information about any more advice. I would love to help you. And thank you again for writing in. Well, let's go on to our next question. Over the summer, I was interviewed on K-Love Radio, 96.7 FM radio, and what was very interesting is a lot of the questions Peter Kratz interviewed me on was about anxiety, depression? What is it like for someone to come into therapy? What is a family like to come into therapy that have issues with anxiety and depression? I think so many people, you know, have an idea what anxiety and depression are, but kind of get confused. What are the differences? How do I know I'm just not sad and I'm depressed, or if I'm grieving, or that I'm nervous about something, or that I'm really anxious? I think one question to ask yourself between anxiety and depression is it impacting your quality of life? That is an important idea and question to have in your head. If the anxiety or the depression or the sadness or the fear, whatever it is it impacting your quality of life to the degree that you're not really enjoying activities anymore? You're not really seeing friends or family anymore. You're kind of isolating. Maybe you're giving away prized possessions, or you're not going to that baseball game anymore. You're not playing softball anymore. You're not meeting the guys for basketball or meeting your girlfriends for that morning jog in the morning. Those are different things. Sometimes you can say, oh, it just happens. I'm just not in the mood anymore. But if you realize you're collecting more activities that you're denying yourself with, or you're kind of isolating yourself with, I would really look for the depression. Depression is, there's a difference. There's sadness, there's depression, and then there's grieving. When grieving, there's a loss or there's a death, and you go through the stages of grief. That also has a different time limit, a different process, but it is also then depression. Depression seems to be something that is this underlying feeling of like sadness, of like looming doom and gloom, and just having no motivation, no excitement about life, really don't want to do anything. You're just feeling kind of blah about things. And it's not something that happens just 1 or 2 days. You'll start to notice more than like 2 to 3 weeks, this feeling is kind of this constant underlying feeling that you can't shake. And you really can't pinpoint like, okay, I'm upset because I lost my job. I mean, that can trigger you to go into a depression later on. But you want to kind of say, okay, there's just this feeling of I'm really not happy about anything. I have bouts of crying. I want to stay in my room. I find I'm sleeping a lot. So you really want to look and speak to someone if you're feeling depressed or you have any concerns. Is it going to your primary care physician or going to a therapist? And it doesn't always mean, again, as I always say, that you have to be put on medication. But I think if you weren't feeling well physically, you would go to a doctor. If you're really not feeling well emotionally or something is a little off, why not go to a professional to get the help that you need? This is something that you don't need to do on your own. There's no medal. There's no competition. You don't have to prove anything. It doesn't mean anything. It's so good to do something and have a team and have other people support you to get through this. And then you also want to look with the depression, as I've said many times before, is really assess for safety and assess for suicide. Are you having suicidal ideation? Do you have a history of suicidal attempts? I think it's really important. Are you having feelings like, I really just don't want to be here anymore? I just wish it would all go away. I think those are some things. Doesn't mean that you're going to actually act on it, but I think don't take that chance. Why live life like that and suffer? Why not have someone that can help you work through that? And I think always go to a professional, speak to someone, and see what's going on. I know sometimes it's so hard also when it's a loved one, if it's a spouse, a partner, or a child of ours, that, you know, we don't understand. Maybe they're going through something, you know, especially if it's a teenager, an adolescent. Maybe they're just going through that age. And a lot of times I get parents who are like, I'm not sure if this is something to be worried about or if this is just normal teenage stuff. And I said, you know what? Trust your gut. Something in your gut said, I don't know. Something's just a little bit off. As I always say, better to be safe than sorry. What do you have to lose if you bring someone in and then you just find out it was a teenage thing and they were just being moody because of that? You know what? They were able to speak to someone. They understand, hey, that's something they can file in their memo, file in their head. Hey, you know what? If something's not a little bit off, I remember my parents took me to somebody to speak to. That's an incredible tool that you're teaching your children, that your loved ones, that it's okay to ask for help. And also with anxiety, a lot of times anxiety and depression go hand in hand. One comes before the other sometimes. So I always try to, you know, research with my clients if they can pinpoint what came first. Because sometimes you can be depressed that you're anxious all the time, or then you start getting a little nervous because you feel like you're depressed all the time. So I think it's being able to see if you can, and it's not something you do overnight, just observe. non-judgmentally, look outside yourself and watch what is came first, the anxiety or the depression. How are you reacting to things? I think also look for patterns. Look for recipes, as I say. What are the recipes, the things that come together, the different events, the different triggers that trigger your anxiety? It could be, you know, the you got up late, your food burnt, there was traffic, like your stomach wasn't feeling okay. Those are patterns. Those are triggers. And the more you're able to identify them and take kind of the scariness away from them, it's a little bit easier to deal with. I find sometimes, you know, people get so anxious, I say anxious about being anxious, that they start avoiding all different things just to make sure, oh, that made me anxious once, I'm not going to do that. But you know what? With anxiety, it'll start hitting all areas of your life. And you don't want to live like that. You can't say, I'm not going to go here, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. You shouldn't limit yourself. Because anxiety, you know, is something, it's very crippling, but it's very treatable. Anxiety is very treatable. And believe me, I have seen so many clients have come out of it that it's just impressive. It's amazing. And I think, you know, with talk therapy and also with EMDR, as you all know, the eye movement desensitization reprocessing that I'm trained in, I have seen incredible, incredible results with anxiety, depression, stuck thoughts, trauma, abuse, witnessing of tragic events. It's just really incredible. And I think sometimes people don't realize what life would be like without the anxiety or the depression because they never really saw past it. They think that's what life is about. And you know, and I try to tell them that's not how you're supposed to be living. There's another way. But you know, if you never really lived another way, why would you think it's out there? So I think that's why it's so important, as I always say, reach out because there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There's someone there. Show up. Don't give up. I know sometimes that is the hardest thing, just to show up when everything in your gut is saying, you know what, why am I here? It's not going to change anything. Nothing's ever going to get better. Just show up and don't give up on yourself. Speak to someone. You're worth it. Things will take a shift. I promise you, things will start to get better. Things don't happen overnight, but just keep going. Keep moving forward. Because it's just so incredible when you start to feel better. When I see clients starting to come over that hill, it is the most rewarding feeling that I've ever seen. It's hard to explain unless you've experienced it and have actually witnessed someone come out of the light and come out of the darkness like that. It is just so, so powerful. So I'd really say, you know, with the anxiety also, there can be anxiety attacks. Sometimes people can just feel nervous in their stomach, tightness in their chest, their heart starts to race, sweating of their hands or legs shaking, arms shaking. But there are also going to be literally panic, anxiety attacks, which I understand they feel like life and death. It is almost, you know, a lot of my clients have said it's almost like they've stepped out of it and everything's kind of moving in slow motion and it's like all kind of off and they're just witnessing this thing having on, but they're feeling this constant fear of life and death and this pit in their stomach of such fear. So I understand it is so frightening to have these anxieties of not wanting to be in your own skin, just feeling like you're crawling out of it. But again, seek help. You don't have to live like that. And again, with anxiety, you don't always have to be on medication. I don't prescribe medication. I've seen medication do wonders too. I'm not a psychiatrist. But I think find out what your different options are. See a therapist. See a psychiatrist. Speak to your primary care doctor. But make sure you reach out. I promise you, I can tell you one thing. If you reach out, you're starting that step forward. Well, my last question I wanted to really start to explore a little bit is a real tough one. And this might be one if there's young children in the room that you might want to just bring them out to the side a little bit because it's some pretty strong content. The next question is, what is the difference between sexual assault and rape? Well, there's legal definitions, there's physical definitions. In my mind, I believe sexual assault and rape are the same thing. It could be someone looking at you in a way or rubbing their hand on you to someone grabbing you to the actual physical act of rape. But I think the impact and the triggers and the feelings that come after that are so intense that my point is why I'm bringing up this, and I'm saying it like this, where I think people are getting confused. I'm not minimizing rape or saying, you know, someone swiping your butt is not as bad or is bad as physical as rape. I'm saying we can't minimize it because so many times victims minimize it. Oh, he didn't do that at least. He just did that. But look at this poor other person who this happened to. I should be lucky. You've got to get out of that minimizing circle. Whatever's happened to you, it's traumatizing. Don't minimize your pain and don't minimize your experience or your trauma. You have to acknowledge it, and that's the only way to start healing from it. And I think there's also, you know, the legal definitions of the physical acts of sexual assault and rape. But I think it's so important to really look at what happens afterwards. I think how it really impacts people, the victims, the quality of life, the steps that they need to go forward to start healing. And again, I've seen incredible success with many of my clients that have sexual abuse, rape history with EMDR. It has been just incredible to people. And I think it's an intense situation because sometimes it really becomes intense that you're at one point almost reliving it, but not to the same degree. But it's being able to reprocess that. You don't have to live with that instant trauma, that how it's so powerful as it just happened years ago. If it keeps happening, that like it's the same day it happened. So again, I think it's so important. Number one, acknowledge and don't minimize what you're feeling. If it's anything to do with sexual assault or rape, if it's anxiety, if it's depression, if it's something's wrong, I'm not having someone call me back for a job, something's wrong with me. Don't minimize yourself. And I'm not, you know, I think it's so important not to be critical of yourself. Yes, we have to be honest, but we have to speak to ourselves in a way that we encourage ourselves. And I know sometimes people say, how do you grow? You can't, you know, not everybody gets a trophy and you can't tell people lies. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying speak to people, speak to yourself in a way that you'll listen, in a way that you'll hear, but also in a way that you'll heal. I mean, nothing gets by when someone yells at you or someone puts you down. You're never going to learn from them. So if you're going to yell at yourself or criticize yourself or call yourself names, how are you going to grow? How you're just re-traumatizing yourself. So that's why it's so, so important for self-care and to be able to speak to yourself in a positive, in a healthy way, and being able to keep moving forward and saying, you know what, I deserve this. There is that light at the end of the tunnel. And I think, you know, you have to teach people how to treat you. But if you're not treating yourself right, how is anybody else going to treat you right? I think it's so important. I know sometimes it sounds like, oh, this is so cliche, that self-care and love yourself. I get it. It sounded cliche many years to me too. But it's really, really important. Watch the difference between saying negative stuff, which if you've been doing it for many, many, many years to yourself, then start saying positive self after a while. Even if you don't believe it right away, see the difference. See how horrible the negative comments and the negative monologue has made you look at different perceptions and how you had that tunnel vision. Could you imagine how powerful speaking in a healthy manner to yourself, how much you'd be empowered? It would give you so much strength, and you're being honest with yourself. So I think it's really, really important for all my listeners, for anyone, to really make sure you treat yourself well and you set yourself up with healthy people around you, healthy environment around you. As I say, feed yourself emotionally, physically, verbally, spiritually. You really have to make sure in all different areas of your life you're growing, you're healing, you're feeding yourself that way so you can just keep on moving so you don't stay stagnant and stuck in certain places. So again, guys, we're almost at the end of the show, and it's also a live show, so if anyone wants to call in these last couple of minutes, the number is 646-716-7250. And again, if you have any questions that you would like to ask me and you want to send in the questions, you can do them live on the air, or you can actually send them to me, as I do many times, anonymously. So I don't read names, obviously, and I change things around so no one could be identified. You can send those to insightintohealing@gmail.com. And I think it's just so important to have all these questions. And I find it so empowering. When also I'm at book signings and people come up with these questions, the discussions that we have, literally sometimes for 3 hours, is so powerful, and it's so educational, and it's so incredible to have people come around and say, you know, so many times I go places and I feel like I have to wear this fake mask that everything's okay in my life. And this is one of the first places I can come and say, hey, I had a tough night last night. I've had a tough night for a couple of months. I'm dealing with a loved one or a family member or a friend who has depression, who's suicidal, who's addicted to heroin. It's kind of comforting to be able to be around other people and be able to say, hey, I just had a tough night, and cry about it, or just say, have people support you and say, I can only imagine, you know, we're here. And just being able to listen. I think just being able to hear you, to acknowledge you, and to listen to you. And that's why I find it so incredible when people write in questions and allow me to help you and allow me to be part of your life. It's just a blessing so much. Again, thank you, everybody, for tuning in this night. And remember, every night, Wednesday nights at 8 p.m., Insight into Healing will air on Blog Talk Radio. Also, all my shows are archived at blogtalkradio.com/AlexaS29. And you can just go to Blog Talk, go look at Insight into Healing and all my shows for, it's like 3 years. All the episodes are there for free to download. And again, please check out my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. And let me know any questions, any support. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a good night, and God bless.